ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay. We're reading from 10th canto, chapter 5, entitled The Meeting of Nanda Maharaj and Vasudev. I believe we're text 21. Yes. Which has a short purport and we'll see, maybe we can move on to the next couple of verses. Please repeat. Tam drishtva sahasotaya deha pranam ivagatam prita priyatamam dorbhyam shashvaje Rema Vibala Tandrista Sahasotaya Deha Pranam Vivagatam Pittak Priyatamam Dorbhyam Shasvaje Prema Vivala Tandrista sahasotaya Deha pranam vivagatam Pritak piyatamam dorbhyam Sasvaje prema vivala. Please chant. Tandrista sahasutaya Dehak pranam vivagatam Pritak priyatamang dorbhyam Sasvaje prema vivala Tandrista sahasutaya Deha pranam vivagatam Pittak priyatamang dorbhyam Sasvaje prema vivala Tandrista sahasutaya Tandrista sahasutaya Deha pranam vivagatam Ladies. Tandrista sahasutaya Deha pranam vivagatam Pritak priyatamam dorbhyam Sasvaje prema vivala Indrista sahasutaya Deha pranam vivagatam Prema Vivala Tam Him Vasudeva Dristva Seen Sahasa Suddenly Utaya Getting up Deha the same body. Pranam, life. Iva, as if. Agatam, had returned. Prita, so pleased. Priyatamam, his dear friend and brother. Dorbhyam, by his two arms. Sasvaje, embraced. Prema vivala, overwhelmed with love and affection. Translation and purports by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. When Nanda Maharaj heard that Vasudeva had come, he was overwhelmed with love and affection, being as pleased as if his body had regained its life. Seeing Vasudeva suddenly present, he got up and embraced him with both arms. Please repeat. When Nanda Maharaj heard that Vasudeva had come, he was overwhelmed with love and affection, being as pleased as if his body had regained its life. Seeing Vasudeva suddenly present, he got up and embraced him with both arms. Purport. Nanda Maharaj was older than Vasudeva. Therefore, Nanda Maharaj embraced him, and Vasudeva offered him namaskara. Text number 22. Pujitak sukam ashina prishtvana mayam adhrita prasakta dhi svatma jayo idam maha ivishambate. Translation. O Maharaj Pritikit, having thus been received and welcomed by Nanda Maharaj with honor, Vasudeva sat down very peacefully and inquired about his own two sons, because of intense love for them. Text 23. Dista bhrata pravayasa idanim aprajasyate prajashaya nivritasya prajayatsamapadyata. Translation. My dear brother Nanda Maharaj, at an advanced age you had no son at all and were hopeless of having one. Therefore, that you now have a son is a sign of great fortune. Purport. At an advanced age, one generally cannot beget a male child. If by chance one does beget a child at this age, the child is generally female. Thus, Vasudeva indirectly asked Nanda Maharaj whether he had actually begotten a male child or a female child. Vasudeva knew that Yasoda had given birth to a female child, whom he had stolen and replaced with a male child. This was a great mystery, and Vasudeva wanted to determine whether this mystery was already known to Nanda Maharaj. On inquiring, however, he was confident that the mystery of Krishna's birth and his being placed in the care of Yasoda was still hidden. There was no danger, since Kamsa, at least, could not learn what had already happened. Om Agyan Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Malitam Jena Tasmai Si Gurave Nama Kum Guru Diva Chalam Pangum Mungaya Te Girim Yad Kipita Mamande Si Gurum Dina Tarnam Danishwaram Premanandam Adamam. So, Srila Prabhupada makes a number of very nice points in these last few verses, pointing out the etiquette, first of all, that should be there in receiving someone. Nanda Maharaj was older than Vasudeva, and as we heard the other day, they were of the same father, right? Step brothers. And Vasudeva offered his namaskaras, his dandavats. Which is the proper etiquette when a senior meets a junior? That's a very important point. Respect should be given. I suppose a lot can be said about that. In the world nowadays, there's not much regard for seniors. More often than not, we want to cart them off into some home, put them off in some distant place where we don't have to think about them or deal with them. And unfortunately, sometimes due to one's lifestyle, by the time you get that age, there's practically nothing else you can do with them. Generally, the standard is that they should be revered and taken care of. That's why it's preferred to have a son, as we'll read in the, today's second verse, second purport. Srila Prabhupada makes this point very nice, that begetting a male child is advantageous in so many ways in typical Vedic culture. Because why? Can anyone say? Why would you prefer to have a son? Because the son can offer pinda. That's most important. Or very important in Vedic culture, that the son would offer sacrifice, thereby relieving and helping the forefathers to advance. Just as we saw in the, as we read in the ninth canto, a very nice story of Bhagirath, who performed sacrifice and austerities bring down a Mother Ganga. For what purpose? To liberate his forefathers who had offended Lord Kapiladev, right? The sons of Sagar had committed an offense toward Lord Kapila. I forget their father, what his name was, but he was performing some Ansuman. No, I think it was someone else. Ansuman was the father of Bhagirath. No, Bhagirath was the son of Ansuman. There was another father of, in this case, Bhagirath, it would have been his great-grandfather. He was performing some horse yagya, and I don't remember, but Lord Indra, as interesting as he may sometimes be, he stole the horse, right? It's described how he stole the horse, and the horse ended up at the ashram of Lord Kapila. And the sons of Sagar, seeing the horse stolen, went out and were looking, and lo and behold, the horse is there at the ashram of Lord Kapila. And they became very angry, and so much so that they wanted to kill Lord Kapila, assault him, due to their anger, sometimes there's commentary that Lord Kapila, by his sight, burned them up. But Srila Prabhupada points out in the purport that because Lord Kapila is situated in the mode of pure goodness, there's no question of him exhibiting that. But instead, it was their offense to such a great personality that the fire within them caused them to burn up. Of course, their bodies are there in ashes, and Bhagirath, later on, two generations down, wanted to liberate them. The understanding was that it was only by touching Ganga. So he made one plan to, he made some, performed some austerities to attract Mother Ganga, but she said, oh, I can't just come. Some male has to catch me. Otherwise, the earth will be destroyed. Lord Shiva, being so merciful and a wonderful Vaishnava, concerned for all living beings, accepted that responsibility. And so the Ganga came down off of his, off the tuft of his head, a tuft of hair, and came down on earth, and thereby liberating the descendants. So, in Vedic culture, having a son is a very, it's an important thing. But on another note, we can understand that in Krishna consciousness, a son or daughter, they're equal. Because it's a matter of engaging in devotional service. The process of Krishna consciousness, devotional service, son or daughter, there's no difference. Here in this purport, we're recognizing how important it is to have a son, and to have a son at such an advanced age. Nanda Maharaj is considered, he was considered senior, so to have a son at that age is, or to have a child even, is it's certainly fortunate. Generally, we see in Vedic culture that at a certain age, right, panchas ordvam vanam rajat, at a certain age, preferably 50, one should leave and go off into the forest to perform austerity, take vanaprastha, and retire and engage in spiritual activities. Separate oneself from these responsibilities, and whatever strength and energy one may have at that advanced age should be used for devotional activities and not continuation of grihastha life. Again, typically. Of course, we can understand that in Krishna consciousness, everything is centered around devotional service. So whether it's young or old, single or married, retired or sannyas or brahmachari, or whether a businessman or whether it's student, everything it revolves around engaging in devotional service. That is the goal. And by engaging in that, those devotional activities, everything that one can achieve in these other statuses of life, whether it's studying, or whether it's performing sacrifice, or whether it's giving charity, or whether it's engaging in philosophical study or fruitive activities, all of these things are automatically achieved by one who engages in the process of devotional service. And Krishna explains that in the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Yogi param sthanam upaiti chadyam. that one who engages in the process of devotional service attains all of these goals of life, and at the end comes to the supreme abode, Krishna, in a devotional service. It's a very important point that Srila Prabhupada makes here, that generally one cannot beget a male child, but in this case, of course, we know that by the arrangement of Yoga Maya, this was actually Vasudev giving birth, and that the switcheroo had been made. So he was still curious whether Nanda Maharaj knew of this switch. And again, this was the arrangement of Yoga Maya. Yoga Maya protects the devotee and facilitates the Lord in engaging in his transcendental pastimes, and engages his devotees in those incredible pastimes as well. As we'll read later on in the 10th canto, there's so many wonderful descriptions and stories, accounts of, not just stories, but accounts of Krishna's transcendental pastimes. And all of this, of course, is under the arrangement and assistance of Yoga Maya, how she bewilders the devotees, and they engage in wonderful, loving, transcendental pastimes. But Krishna also has his Mahamaya. And that Mahamaya is also covering the living beings, so that the Lord's activities, again, are a mystery. As Prabhupada writes here, this was a great mystery, Krishna's birth. So in two ways we can understand how Yoga Maya, she creates this mystery of Krishna's birth and his transcendental activities, but also Yoga Maya is also creating a mystery for the materialists. Mayatatam idam sarvam. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that he's also he's everywhere, but he's there in his unmanifested form. So for the materialists, this is a mystery, how the Lord can be all pervasive, and yet he's not a part of it. He's still removed from it all. I was speaking with a gentleman. He called out of the blue yesterday from New York, and he started asking so many questions about Krishna, and how, and started off with asking a number of questions about the demigods, and it happened to be Lord Indra, one of them. And so we started talking about how these different personalities, they're considered demigods. And what is a demigod? We went on to explain how they're jivas that are empowered by the Lord for helping to, or assisting the Lord in his management of the universe. Then the question arose, how is it that God is everywhere, but he can be still localized someplace, or he can be in his transcendental abode. So for the common person, this is a mystery. And Krishna says that also in Bhagavad Gita, janma karma chame divyam, that Krishna's pastimes are not easy to understand, but one can understand by engaging in devotional activities. All of this becomes revealed. It becomes so attractive, so much so that again, Yoga Maya comes in and bewilders the devotee, so that living being can again partake in a transcendental pastimes with the Lord. So it's very again fascinating that the Lord can perform all of these wonderful activities, and all of this has been made available to us by Srila Prabhupada. It has to be understood through the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. Otherwise, these pastimes, they again, they appear to be just some fantasy, just some mystical, unknowable, or just some nice poetic writings. But actually, it's quite interesting how Srila Prabhupada can make all of these activities come to life, to make them real. So we'll end there. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you for a nice class. So you were describing how it was very surprising that Nanda Maharaj was able to have a child, what to speak of a male child, because of his advanced age. And then you went on to further explain how generally in Vedic culture, when somebody gets to an advanced age, especially the male, he will refrain from those activities and you try to focus more on spiritual life, advancing in spiritual life. And so then you kind of stop short of asking the obvious question, presenting the obvious question, which is, why was Nanda Maharaj doing that? In other words, because he's presented, at least we get the impression, no, he's presented as an advanced devotee. I mean, there's a verse by, I think it's Raghupati Upadhyaya, where he expresses how he's not interested in this benediction, that benediction. He just wants to be able to remember Nanda Maharaj, in whose courtyard the Supreme Personality of Godhead is playing like an ordinary child, something like that. So he's presented it as, like, you know, an advanced devotee. And also, another, just to throw it into the mix, Yasoda is, at least I get the impression that she's a young lady, because, you know, in the pastime of Damodar, she's chasing Krishna around, you know, as it sounds like, and her beauty is described elsewhere in the 10th canto, I think in this, you know, part of the 10th canto. So I was just wondering if anybody was aware of any comments by the Acharyas, kind of, you know, throwing any additional light or insight onto this particular point.
I don't know any. If someone else... again, the question is...
Any other question?
Well, the comment was that the point was that Vasudev is, or Nanda Maharaj in this case, Maharaj, actually it's a Vasudev, but Nanda Maharaj, the question was, how is it that at such an advanced age he's having a child when he should be performing austerities, right? He should have gone off, but instead he's having children.
Yeah, I'm not trying to criticize. I'm just kind of curious to know if any of the Acharyas have said anything.
And then the second half would be that Yasoda was, we understand that she must have been younger. So it is curious. But again, typically in Vedic culture, the male would be older and would have a number of wives, that's one point there, so that they may not always be of the same age. In this case, he's also a king, so he has a lot of responsibilities, and he could have gone off, certainly, but again, it's a transcendental pastime that the Lord wants his devotees in Vrindavan, Nanda, Jasoda, and the residents of Vrindavan to be engaged in, to be a part of his transcendental leelas. But otherwise, I don't have any. I don't have much realization on that. Yes.
Prabhu, is not in this topic. It's just a question.
Again, before you go there, anywhere, is there any other comment on Bhrigupati Prabhu's... And then we'll move on to other topics.
Again, thank you for a very nice class. We'll appreciate it. When we got to Bhrigupati's question, why is Nanda Maharaj at this point in his life performing austerities? As many people, as they get older, they get ready to enter into a vanaprastha situation and then ultimately sannyas. But Srila Prabhupada mentions that is not the path for everyone. But those who are advanced, pure devotees of the Lord and who have already cultivated intense affection, intense submission and surrender and love for the Lord, they're not required, especially if the wife is the same. They're both in the same, what we call Mahabhagavat stage. Therefore, being in that stage, they simply assist each other in their continued process of loving Krishna and serving Krishna and adoring Krishna and exalting Krishna. So, therefore, the idea doesn't mean that everybody has to become vanaprastha. Everybody has to be, especially the residents of Vrindavan, who are already, they've passed that in previous lifetimes. They've gone through that, and therefore they've come to this position of supreme love for Krishna. And therefore there's no even sense of family anymore. It's just everyone is a servant of Krishna. That's the way of seeing everybody. And when you see that everyone is a servant, you're free of those strictures that are for mainly for persons like us who are not in love with Krishna as they are. And the whole point of austerities is to gradually come to that point through the grace that Krishna gives you through the practice of austerities like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can understand that the goal is attaining pure love of Krishna. So whether it's in this ashram or that ashram, it's not mandatory, but the opportunity is there. The recommendation is there that one should gradually detach so that you can come to that point of pure love. But if already in your devotional life, you're feeling that, you're experiencing that, then certainly there's no loss in maintaining that ashram. Rabindranath Prabhu. It's on the same point.
Yes. Yeah, Prabhupada mentions in one lecture that according to the Varnas, there's different ashrams. So, like he said, Vaishyas, they only have the Brahmacharya and the Grihastha ashram. Whereas the Kshatriyas have three ashrams and the Brahmanas have four ashrams, like that.
And then the Maharaj was considered a Vaishya. Is it the same point, or are you talking about something different?
What?
I don't know. I'm asking.
My question.
Is it on the same point, or is it a different question?
What you're gonna ask? A slightly different question. When the Vasudev Indavaki produced Krishna and then transferred him over to Nanda Maharaj and took the girl child from Yasoda back, well, Kamsa tried to kill her and threw her up in the air and swished at her with a sword, not realizing who she was, she manifested as Durga, which was the worshipful deity of Kamsa. How did he then explain that Devaki, who had had a child, suddenly didn't? The child evaporated. How did that work out?
That the child evaporated?
Well, he comes through Durga, up the baby, up in the air, and chopped at her and to kill her. And where, you've seen the illustration, which I designed, actually. And then she manifested, Durga manifested with eight arms in front of him. So Kamsa was stuck with the problem that he was killing his own worshipable deity, because he was a worshiper of Durga. So he tried to kill Durga, thinking he was killing the eighth son or eighth child of Devaki. And, well, then Durga didn't come back. She didn't turn back into a baby. She went, boom, out. So how did that work out for having Vasudev having this child, and then suddenly there is no child, it vanished?
Maharaj, you want to comment on that?
Question, if he could please pose that. In other words, yes, she has no child, and the child has turned into
the
Durga
child
Devi.
Was there. The child was there. It manifested as Durga Devi, and
yes.
he had his sword high, but he didn't strike. He was shocked when he saw that it was Durga Devi. He held up, and she spoke, and then she disappeared into the heavens.
Yes, yes. Well, one of the things about this is that in spite of the fact that Kamsa was fearless when it came to the general demigods, Indra. It's mentioned that many of his followers had mentioned that in wars and in fights, Kamsa was victorious, and therefore he had nothing to worry about. Not so with Durga. Durga is the most, she has power over all of the demigods. She is very high position, and he was definitely fearful of her. When he saw those eight arms with the weapons in each hand, he started to virtually tremble, because he knew that if he wanted to be the emperor of the world, he's going to have to make friends with Devaki, because Durga is saying nice things. Why are you trying to harm your sister? To give up this plan. The one who you want to kill has been born elsewhere, said. So therefore, he was in a very submissive position at that point. He had to be. He was frightened. The loss of the possible being being an emperor, that was his goal. And if Durga kills him, there goes his plan, you see. So therefore, what happened was that he made a so-called turnaround. And he acted towards Devaki, and I'm so sorry, please accept my apologies, I really didn't mean that. But also try to understand that what I did was really under the rule of fate or karma. It just happened to happen, like I didn't have anything really to do about it.
And killing your other children, it was just one of those things.
He disavows any responsibility and says it was his fate, and I was under. In one sense, it's true, because he was under a curse, and he was under Hiranyakashipu's curse from a previous lifetime that he would kill the six grandsons of Hiranyakashipu in a previous time, who would come as Kalanimi's son or Kamsa's son. So therefore, there was. And the curse, of course, of Hiranyakashipu is definitely strong and powerful. He's not like some, if I go and I curse you, nothing's going to happen. But he had a lot of Shakti from all of his austerities. So anyway, in that sense, it was true. But he was not referring to that past. He was simply saying, we're all a bunch of, we're victims of karma, and we get what we've done from the past. So please don't be so sad, Devaki. After all, it just had to happen. And in the ultimate analysis, your children are still alive as souls somewhere else. I mean, he knew the philosophy, and he just bent it, you know, so that she would be pacified. And actually, she did become pacified due to her advanced, elevated state of consciousness. She knew that everything that we see today will one day not be here. It'll be gone. So he was able to even persuade her for that. That's the best I can offer.
Thank you. Sachi Tanoy? You had one quick question?
I think it's
okay. Hmm? Okay. We'll end there. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.